All this week, we've been looking ahead to the 10th anniversary of 9/11. We've spoken with people whose memories are still extremely vivid 10 years later, people whose lives have been changed forever by those events on September 11th. Clearly, the human cost is absolutely incalculable. But the emotional, political costs aside, there are economic costs associated with 9/11. And here to explain, David Sanger, chief Washington correspondent for our partner, The New York Times. You can also hear David every Monday on New York Public Radio's WQXR's The Washington Report. And David, how do you even go about calculating the cost of an event like September 11th?
Well, Celeste, it's not easy. And, you know, there have been many estimates of many different parts of it. What we thought we would do was try to look at the direct cost, the cost that came right out of the attack, and then what I guess I call the cost of choice, choices we made that were not obvious after 9/11. And, you know, talking about memories, I was with President Bush that morning down in the school in Florida, and, you know, the idea that we were about to go see the entire government of the United States make choices that we would be paying for, thinking about, and opportunity costs we would be paying for many years was the farthest thing from my mind that morning. And then finally, there are costs that we're just going to have for many years to come. I mean, think about taking care of the veterans, which came, by our estimates, to $589 billion over the next 40 years, which is just by way of measure more than the United States has spent on the war in Afghanistan since it began 10 years ago.
Well, explain when you started following these branches out. I mean, for example, taking care of veterans is a direct result of the conflicts in Iraq and Afghanistan as a result of September 11th. When you started following them out, how far away did you get? I mean, what's the furthest point you followed and calculated the cost into your total?
Well, Perhaps to get to the farthest, the easiest way to explain it, Celeste, is getting to the closest. If you take the toll, the physical damage, the payments that were made to families of the victims, and then you just take the direct economic impact on New York, on Washington, on the rest of the country, as you remember that huge slowdown that happened after the 9/11 attacks, what you get is something under $1 trillion. However, the total that we came up with of the total cost of the response when you extend everything out was $3.3 trillion. So it tells you that the next $2.3 trillion-plus, basically, was all pretty much cost of choice or what you had to pay as a result. So war funding, you asked about it. If you lump Afghanistan and Iraq together, you get $1.649 billion, or nearly half of that total $3.3 trillion. Now, some of Afghanistan costs, I think you'd have to say, were unavoidable. I think any president probably would have gone in after the Taliban. Whether they would have stayed 10 years is another issue.
We're speaking with David Sanger, chief Washington correspondent for our partner, The New York Times. David, did it seem expensive to you, more than you expected?
The $3.3 trillion seemed expensive, but what really struck me, Celeste, there was really no national debate about how else we might have spent, say, $2 trillion of that.
Yeah.
Sanger, you were with Bush on September 11th. Did you fly around the country as they figured out where he would go?
I did not. I was on the Air Force One pool, the group of press that flies in, as we flew into Florida, so I was not on the way out. What I did do, John, on the way out was, as I was left in Florida, so I discovered the President of the United States that night had slept in a hotel 20 miles from where Muhammad Atta went to flight school.
Oh, wow.
And I spent the next 2 days at the flight school trying to figure out what Muhammad Atta had been doing down there.
Amazing. David Sanger, chief Washington correspondent for our partner, The New York Times. And you can hear him every Monday on WQXR's The Washington Report from New York Public Radio. Thanks, David.
Thank you.
All this week, we've talked about the upcoming 10th anniversary of September 11th. Earlier in the program, we heard from Andrew Card. He's the former chief of staff under George W. Bush, and the man who first told the president that a plane had crashed into the World Trade Center.
I opened the door to the classroom, and then there was a break in the conversation in the front of the classroom where the teacher was then speaking to the students. And I walked up to the president and leaned over and whispered into his right ear, a second plane hit the second tower. America is under attack.
That's Andrew Card actually speaking to our partner, the BBC. And it's an image that many of us remember of Andrew Card leaning over to inform the president. But there was somebody who was actually there watching it happen on that day. David Sanger, chief Washington correspondent for our partner, the New York Times. You can also hear David every Monday on New York Public Radio's WQXR's The Washington Report. So, David, did you have any idea when Andrew Card is there describing leaning over and telling the president and what words he used? Did you have any idea at that moment what was happening?
You know, I did, because at the moment that the second plane hit, I was in a classroom right next door to where the president was, where the networks had all of their equipment set up. I had gone in there to see what this first plane and first tower was all about. And so I saw the second plane hit. And it was interesting being in a room with a group of journalists who followed us, because two or three of us looked at each other, and the first thing we said was bin Laden, which I discovered later on was not a common reaction, but certainly was the first thing we thought of. And then I went back over, and by that time the president was sitting there, the scene that you've seen in the movie, where it seems interminable in the movie. It did not seem interminable in person. It seemed at that time to be a perfectly logical reaction, because there wasn't a whole lot he could do.
Well, what happened then? Take us through the next moments when the president finished speaking to the classroom and I assume got whisked away.
He got whisked back to a holding area that they had, and we've now, you know, reconstructed that, and the 9/11 Commission has. And spent a fair bit of time, we now know, on the phone with Vice President Cheney, with some other advisors, trying to figure out what was going on. And the communications were not great, and the Secret Service was very eager to get him out of there and onto Air Force One and up high, because they didn't know if the school itself would be a target. He came out later on to the gymnasium of the school and gave that rather oddly pitched line where he said, "We're going to find the folks who did this." Very different in tone than the one he finally struck later in the evening, when he first sort of laid out the Bush doctrine that he would not only go after al-Qaeda, but any group or country that helped them.
Well, let me just ask you, David Sanger, chief Washington correspondent for our partner, the New York Times, George Bush is not in that job anymore. You still are. So looking back over your reporting and of the events since 9/11, how have your kind of thoughts of the events of that day perhaps been colored by what's come since?
Well, I think two things. One is, I'm struck by the fact that none of us really knew the enormity of what had happened. And I'm also struck by how unprepared the Bush administration was for it. You know, I heard Donald Rumsfeld talking recently on one of these memorial events, and he mentioned that nobody asked him about al-Qaeda during his confirmation hearing. Well, that tells you how out of tune Congress was, and maybe the whole nation was, because certainly there had been a number of al-Qaeda attacks, including on the Cole and USS Cole and others around the world. The second big issue that strikes me is, we never really had a national debate about what proportionate and correct response would be. And that, I think, in large part, how we got ourselves wrapped up in Iraq, a country that even as President Bush himself argued was not part of the attack, but he said he simply had a lower tolerance for risk.
And that's David Sanger, chief Washington correspondent for our partner, the New York Times. You can hear him on New York Public Radio's WQXRs on Monday in the Washington Report.
On Notes from America, we have conversations with people across the country about how we can truly become the nation that we claim to be. Each week, we talk about race, our politics, education, relationships, usually all of them, because everything's connected. And you, our listeners, are at the center of those conversations. I'm Kai Wright. Join me on Notes from America, wherever you get your podcasts.